We're good to go. Can everybody hear me? Yeah? All the way in the back as well? Perfect. All right. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for coming. I know it is the last day, the last session of the conference. I was kind of nervous on like how it will go. Regardless of being nervous on giving a talk anyways, having been booked in the last session, so I would highly encourage, since this is a limited audience, let's make it interactive. If you have questions, please feel free to let us know, go by the mic or just raise your hand, and we'll field any questions that we have. We have a lot of interesting, cool scenarios that we're going to talk about. We are engineers, so we kind of get passionate and we kind of keep going and go fast, go slow. So don't feel free to interrupt, okay? So with that, I am Ritwik. I am a software engineering manager at Microsoft, working on data deduplication. And my colleague, Daniel, is here. We are going to talk about data deduplication at scale. Just a quick count. I mean, how many of you have used Windows Server and data deduplication in the past? Just have heard about it. Okay, good. So for you who already heard about it and have used it, the first section is going to be about what deduplication really is and how it functions and how it works and some examples of savings. So that might not be that interesting because it will be an introductory part. The second parts are going to be with examples on workloads. So with that, here are the three main things that we are going to cover in this session. Think about it as three different breakout sessions, but we are trying to keep it dense and get a lot of information into one session. The first part, we are going to cover deduplication, what it is, the fundamentals of it, the concepts, how it works, and examples of how to think about savings or space savings with deduplication. And then the second two sections, we are going to take examples. The first example is with what we support with a VDI workload. So you can apply data deduplication to your primary storage with VDI and expect to save a lot of space. And in the last section, we are going to cover your secondary storage, which is a backup storage. And I'm going to talk about why those workloads and data sets are interesting from a price and a performance perspective. So think about these are the three major sections that we're going to cover today. Okay? So let's go. So data deduplication, what is it? So the concept has been around for a while in the storage industry. Storage has been exponentially growing for many, many years. I mean, ever since the dollar per gigabyte of drive capacity that you can buy today is really low, which means people tend to store a lot of data and then incur costs in terms of ongoing maintenance of storage. So the motivation is how can you reduce that overall capacity that you are actually storing, and deduplication comes into the picture in that way. The concept is we introduced Windows Server deduplication in Windows Server 2012 originally, and what it does is while actually working on files on a particular volume, we try to not get in the way of anything which is accessing the file. So think about some user who's actually going and accessing the file. We don't want to get in the way. So what we do is we do post-processing of a volume. We identify files which are within our scope. So we have an optimization engine which runs. We identify a set of files which are in scope. We chunk up those files using state-of-the-art chunking algorithm, and we pack those chunks into our chunk store. And then when we actually chunk up another file, we go and see whether the chunks already exist in our chunk store, and we just store the stubs. So thereby, multiple files are chunked, and only one copy of that chunk exists in our chunk store. So that is a conceptual way of how deduplication actually works. Our overhead is fairly minimal. We serve out all the reads directly from our chunk store, and the writes we have to rehydrate back onto the file. So once we have chunked up all the files, what the next step is to actually make sure that we save the space. So what we do is we put a reparse point on the file itself, and we direct that into our chunk store, and we delete the original copy of the file. And that's conceptually how it actually works. So let's take an example of a volume which is, let's say, 5 terabytes in size. Our optimization job will run. It will identify all the files which are in scope, chunk them up into our chunk store, and you can have a significant number of savings. The 80% example that I'm using here is actually representative of several customer proofs that we have got. NTTX, for example, I'm going to quote it. If any of you attended the storage deep dive session with Sid, you will have seen that example. NTTX quotes us as having saved 80% of their total VHD capacity on their private cloud. And this is an actual customer example today. But the amount of data that you can save will really vary on your data set. So VHD data sets, which tend to have a lot of duplicate data within the VHD files, are a good candidate for dedupe. Some other examples like SQL Server database data or things like that might not be as tuned because there tends to be a lot of unique data sets and different size data set in there which doesn't make a good candidate of dedupe. So the savings rate actually varies. But overall, we actually try to compact all the files and giving back all the remaining capacity for use in other ways or actually in other form factors. So a quick history of dedupe. We introduced deduplication with Windows Server 2012. The first set, we were supporting general purpose file server data. Think about home directories and file shares, which are constantly accessed. That was our first thing. We actually had significant savings on home folders as well. With Windows Server 2012 R2, we announced support for VDI as a workload. But now at TechEd, what we are announcing is that we can support VDI at scale. And I'm going to walk you through a case study that we actually did internally at Microsoft and all the knobs that you can play around with and all the settings to achieve the maximum savings for your data set while achieving the scale for VDI. And then what we are also announcing is that we are able to support virtualized backup scenario. The backup store tends to be a large data set which is a good candidate for dedupe, and there is high interest in compressing or saving costs by consolidating that storage, and we are able to support that as well. But for both of that, you need to actually download and install the latest patch that we have for November, which will be available in November at the Microsoft update, and I'll have details on that as well. So with that, let's go into the first section, which is VDI, take an example of a reference deployment that we did, so that how we actually go about achieving a VDI deployment at scale. And this is really a case study. This is something that we are sharing as a good practice. We are publishing a white paper on what we went about doing with this particular case study and how we were able to achieve a scale for VDI sessions. So when we are deploying VDI, it's an interesting workload in a sense that it's a good candidate for dedupe because there tends to be a lot of VDI VHDs, especially in the personal desktop scenario, which tend to have a lot of data which is common across these VHDs. So it makes it an interesting candidate for deduplication, but at the same time, VDI's workload in itself is highly sensitive to disk latencies. They are in the order of milliseconds. So when you are actually remotely connecting to a VDI session over SMB, you need to serve that I/O back in a millisecond. And so when deduplication is in the picture, that additional perf overhead that I was mentioning about, especially in the write case, becomes extremely sensitive. So we need to actually tune our workload and our settings so that we are able to meet VDI, and especially at scale. So that's why it becomes a little bit more interesting. The tendency there tends to be that when you try to have a highly performant, highly optimized system, people start questioning whether you need to actually control costs as well. Because you can try to get there by putting in a lot of SSDs there, but then it will cost you a lot more money. So we are trying to find a balance between the price to performance, especially at scale. And then validating this at scale, especially making sure that all the VDI machines are up and running and you can actually boot in, especially at a boot storm scenario on Monday morning, tends to be a little bit complex, so in setting up this whole thing. So specifically for that, we had to be honest, we had a customer request for publishing a guidance on how to actually achieve it based on our internal testing results. So this is the white paper that we are publishing today. Actually, it's on Download Center as of yesterday. And the link is in the deck as well, and it will be in the materials. And you can actually read it in great detail of exactly what we deployed, especially with the hardware configuration and the software configuration and all the knobs to achieve scale. So our main goal for the VDI reference deployment was that we wanted to achieve scalability for the VDI sessions. We were targeting around 1,500 concurrent VDI sessions, which kind of simulates a small to medium business, if you will. We wanted to have high reliability in the system. If you have heard about continuously available file servers, we have been on this path for several years now, starting from Windows 2012. With R2, we announced continuous availability as well. So with all of our workloads, we want to make sure that we are able to serve the VDI workload with reliability. So we always have multiple points, multiple paths to the storage subsystem, and no single point of failure. And then we wanted to achieve performance. As I was mentioning, VDI tends to be highly sensitive to performance. So for doing that, we installed, we are using standard JBODs with storage spaces, and we installed it with tiering. I'll talk a little bit about the interesting knobs on tiering and how that interacts with the different layers in the storage stack in a minute. And then finally, to achieve control costs, we are installing it with Dedup so that we can compress the data set and we are able to achieve the scale that we want. So conceptually, this is what the deployment looks like. This is something that we have supported even in Windows Server 2012. On the left is a four-node Hyper-V cluster, which is serving all the VDI sessions. It's connected via SMB3 to a scale-out file server, which has tiered storage provided by Storage Spaces, and that is on the file server side. On those CSV volumes is where we enable Dedup. So with that, my friend Daniel is going to show us how this all works.
All right. So let me give you a little demo of. Let me give you a little demo of the VDI reference deployment that we built. And the deployment is actually located in Redmond, so I have to remote in, and it's a bit choppy, so bear with me, but we'll make it through. So as Rudwig said, this is a Hyper-V over SMB scenario. So we have separate compute nodes from storage nodes. I'm connected here to one of the Hyper-V compute nodes, and as you can see, there are currently about 1,600 VMs here, and more than 1,500 of these are actually our tenant VMs that are all running currently. So I can go down here and show you. They're all actually running. So now let me switch over to a storage node here in this system and show you one of the shares that where we host these VMs. Now you can see that this share holds several hundred virtual disks for the VDI deployment here. Let's take a look at this one here, which belongs to the tenant VM number one. So this is the virtual disk for the tenant VM number one. And as you can see here, the on-disk size of this virtual disk is 19.2 gigabytes, but we're actually only storing 1.6 gigabytes in the file. The rest of the data is deduplicated in the chunk store. So as you might imagine, we get some pretty decent dedup savings out of this. So let's take a look at the dedup volumes on this system. So we have a total of 6 dedup volumes here. And we're getting pretty good savings on each of them, above 80%, saving multiple terabytes of data on each of them. So let me drill down into this one here to show a little more details. Now you can see that the capacity of this volume is 3 terabytes, but we're actually storing close to 5 terabytes worth of logical data on this volume. yet was only using less than 1 terabyte. And that includes everything. That includes our chunk store, all the data that is recalled in the files. This is really enabled by the fantastic savings rate that we see in these VDI deployments. And it really shows how dedupe can make your VDI storage much more efficient. Now, you might say, can I still actually use the VMs if they're in this deduped state? So to show you this, I'll switch over here to one of the VMs. So this is one of the VMs, which is fully deduplicated. And I can just normally work here. Let me just go here and bring up some PDF, for example. And as you can see, it just works. So, okay. Yes, so this is a little problem with RDP here, I would imagine. So let me also bring up Excel. This is actually an interesting chart, and let me take a minute to explain to you what this shows. It's one of the measurements that we did when running login VSI on this deployment. And it shows really over time how the IOPS evolve as we're booting up more and more VMs. And the blue line really shows how we're getting to over 1,500 VMs in the end. And you can see that the gray chart here is the IOPS. And we're, for a non-dedupe case, if we disable dedupe, we get around 200 maybe to 500 IOPS on a per share basis. And this is because the green line shows that we have the green line really shows the disk hit rate here. So all of the IOPS, all of the IOs that are seen on the share level, how many of them are actually hitting the disk? And this, the green line here is at 1, which shows that pretty much every read that is issued by a VM hits the disk. Now let's see how this changes when we do the same experiment with dedupe. Now, first of all, you see the VMs are still booting up in the same way. This is because we were running login VSI in the benchmark mode. But you can also see that we're getting way better IOPS now. So we're getting 400 up to 1,000 IOPS. And this is explained in the green line here, which is, again, the disk hit rate. And you see this drops over time. So as we have more and more VMs booting up, we have more and more reads that we can actually serve from the cache. And the reason for that is that we can compress the data so much now that we can do very efficient caching on our chunk store. So by the end of this run, we only have 60% or so of the reads actually hitting the disk. The rest we can serve directly from the cache, which is why we get better IOPS. So to summarize, not only does dedupe give you great savings for your storage in this VDI scenario, you also get IOP improvements because we can shrink the data so much. So Ludwig, why don't you take over and explain how we can build and configure such a system?
Yeah, absolutely. But before I do that, I'll share a little bit of a personal thing. Today morning, we were split on whether we want to do this demo live from a server which is in Redmond with deduplicated data, or we need to go run a video. We chose to actually do this live. Can I get a round of applause for just doing this live right now on the wireless?
Thanks.
That was nerve-wracking. I was like, wait a minute, that should work. But it did. So that's cool. So how did we get to that? So I shared the conceptual diagram of the Hyper-V cluster. This is actually the more detailed diagram. What you see on the left is we had 4-node Hyper-V cluster, which is serving out 1,500 VDI sessions, which is consuming storage from a 3-node scale-out file server, connected over SMB3 with CSV volumes. And then we had simple storage enclosures with JBODs, connected dual path, and we had enabled storage spaces with tiering, and we were deduplicating the volume on those shares as well. And then on the right are the infrastructure servers. If you're familiar with VDI, it requires a broker, some launchers, and a couple of other infrastructure servers to fire up the whole system. But when we were deploying this to actually achieve scale, there were several considerations that we needed to make. The first one was, how do you actually deploy the highly available storage? And there are a lot of considerations for that. The interesting balance there is between price to performance. If you're using just a bunch of disks with standard controllers and with spaces, how do you consolidate the right number of SSDs and HDDs, and what's your right sizes and caches, and the settings so that you can make this whole configuration highly available? So it required some thinking. The second one is, how do you best take advantage of the SSD space? SSDs being costlier, we wanted to make sure that we are optimizing whatever we have on the hot tier. So how do we actually make sure that that tier is actually being utilized in the way we want, best so that we can actually serve out the dollar per VM for a VDI session is still maintained. And then what are all the different performance bottlenecks to solve? As I was saying, VDI tends to be highly sensitive to latencies, and especially when you're doing it remotely, you have to be even more careful, because if you are actually, let's say, not serving out I/O at a particular amount of time, that the sessions will crash and you have to restart from the beginning, which is not a good experience for the end users. So let's deep dive into each one of these. So how do you actually set up for highly available storage? As I was mentioning, we set up a clustered sale-out file server, 3-node cluster with CSV volumes. We had fully redundant paths to all storage from all the nodes, so that you can actually have failures at any point, and we don't have a single point. We don't have a single path which is a single point of failure. We were using multiple storage pools, which are exposed to all the different nodes. And then we had two-way mirrors, which are for the pools, so that we are resilient to a single drive failure. And then we are enabled it with enclosure awareness, so that we are resilient to JBOD failures, so that you can actually fail over and to a different JBOD as well. And then we had how do we take best advantage of the SSDs? Enable tiering. The SSD tier size, and this is a critical, the SSD tier size needs to be the same as your working set size. So we had to balance that, measure the working set, and make sure that the SSD tier is actually configured for that. I'll cover this in a little bit more detail in the later part as well, is that we had to separate out what is actual writes to the system versus what is actually paging writes. This is always an interesting case, and I'll actually cover that in a little bit more detail, why this is interesting. And then for avoiding performance bottlenecks, we wanted to make sure that the writes which are going all the way in the system are aligned, so that we do not have to pay the cost of splitting up writes and different layers of the stack needing to wait on writes to complete. So we wanted to align to 64 KB boundaries. And then in terms of servers, we are using standard servers which are available in the market today. But we wanted to make sure that the system cache is enough to support the 1,500 concurrent sessions being able to boot. So we have 128 gig per node in the working memory. So once you have set up the hardware, the next step is, how do you set up the software? If you have heard about the previous, if you have been to some of the previous talks in storage, we are moving more and more towards a software-defined storage world. So this is really about, how do you actually configure the software which is on the system so that it actually meets the needs of your workload. And we are splitting it up into four different sections. First is, how do you configure the volumes? How do you size the volumes correctly? When you have 1,500 concurrent VDI sessions, we want to make sure that the VHDs are actually allocated correctly for the personal desktop scenario. And you actually have the right sizing on the volume so that you can serve out the VHDs in the right size, and deduplication is able to catch up to the churn which is happening on the system for the scenario as well. How do you configure the data? This is about the data on a VDI scenario can be split into three major big sections. When a VDI session is happening, you have a user's data. This is whatever is happening in the user space, the user-specific data. The second one is system data. And the system data can be split into two: the OS data, which keeps the system up and running, the operating system, and then the page file data. The reason it's interesting to actually split both of them in terms of a system data and a page file data is because page file data tends to be not a good candidate for deduplication. There are a lot of heavy write activities happening, which need to be served out in a very short amount of time. And it just is per VM specific. So it doesn't necessarily tend to be a good deduplication candidate, not only from a data set perspective, but from a IO activity perspective. So we split up the system data between OS data and page file data. So between these three classes of data, how do you place the data in the right volume so that you can actually serve out the data with the needs of the VDI scenario? How do you configure Dedo? And we'll talk a little bit about the knobs and things like that. And then finally, how do you configure VDI? Again, a reminder that this is actually all enabled with the November patch. So we'll talk a little bit about how to get the November patch and things like that. So now going into details on each one of these. So the first section is how do you size the different volumes? As I was mentioning earlier, deduplication is an optimization engine which actually runs on a per volume basis. So it actually scans the volume, it actually figures out which files it needs to deduplicate, then it deduplicates the files in a single-threaded way. That's how it works in Windows Server 2012 R2. Which means that it scales linearly to the size of the volume in terms of the amount of time it takes to deduplicate. Which makes it that if you have larger size volume, it will take even more time to deduplicate. Which means that if you have a VDI scenario where you're trying to keep activity during daytime up and not have a performance impact, you're trying to deduplicate only in the core hours of the night. So that was our design consideration. Depending on your needs when you're deploying a VDI scenario, that design consideration could be different. It could be depending on which time of how many hours that you can allocate for the optimization job to finish. But we were sticking to, we need to finish the 1500 VM sessions within 4 hours. And we want, then thereby our volume size was tending to be around 3 terabytes. Because that's how you can scale. But it also depends on the number of IOPS you're getting out of your system. Because it's a function of how fast I can deduplicate and how many IOPS I actually sort out of the system. So it really depends on your configuration, but this was our design consideration. Once you size the volumes, now I have to figure out where am I going to place the data. Now, in terms of deduplication, as I was mentioning, the reads tend, and as Daniel demoed, the reads tend to be coming out of the cache directly, but the writes have a performance penalty. It's minimal, but there is. And especially for VDI, we need to be sensitive to that performance penalty. Now, what happens is when you have two different tiers of storage, the fast tier with SSDs and the slow tier with HDDs, what tends to happen is you want to keep your performance sensitive data set to the fast SSD tier. So our recommendation is that you actually pin the dedup chunk store, which Daniel was talking about, to the slow tier. And when the writes are happening, the faster tier will come into action, and it will actually be able to serve out the data. So that's our recommendation. The way we went about doing it is we use System Center Virtual Machine Manager. You can classify storage. You can carve out different storage pools and different in different dimensions, and you can pool that particular storage as either OS data. And the other point which is also interesting is, as I was mentioning, in terms of the OS data and HD data is the page file data which is also mentioned on the slide. Here, what was also interesting is that, as I was mentioning, we wanted to split up the system data between the OS and the paging data, right? The way we actually went about doing that is we exposed a disk onto the VM itself, which is on a separate volume onto the storage pool. And then we actually classified that particular storage pool as a paging pool within System Center Virtual Machine Manager. And that's how you actually classify between the OS data and the paging data on the volumes as well. So that's the main part. I actually covered this slide earlier in the section where we were actually talking about the dedup chunk cache on the SD tier and the HDD tier. As I was mentioning, we want to put the chunk store on the hard on the HDD tier and the write data on the faster SSD tier. But it is also interesting to note that we want to make sure that we are not optimizing too fast. What happens is if a lot of VM sessions are actually booting up, they tend to actually produce a lot of churn at night, but we want to finish that churn within 4 hours also. But running that on a nightly basis seems to be a little bit excessive. So we kept the times that we run the optimization job to be 3 days. It allows us to catch up. It allows enough activity to happen to have enough churn so that our optimization job is successful, and it still be able to finish within the 3 hours or 4 hours which it's allocated in. And then finally, once we configure the volumes, we place the data, we place the different volumes in the different settings, we configure VDI. With Windows Server 2012 R2, only Gen 1 VMs for Hyper-V are supported by VDI. And the sizing of the VM itself is something which is really dependent on your workload. We were running with Windows Server 2001, Windows 7 SP1, and we had a specific size of the VM. The details of this are actually in the white paper also. But it will really depend on what capacity you are provisioning and what the workload which is running in the VM is for you to provision those VMs. But again, we were using Windows we were using System Center Virtual Machine Manager for deploying all the VMs across all the different storage nodes. And then finally, for making all this work, we are releasing a patch in November. We found a lot of issues within the whole storage stack itself. We have those learnings, and to make the entire system work end to end, we highly recommend that you deploy this patch. The KVT article is listed here as well. It's going to be released in November. And then finally, here's our login VSI numbers. On the left, you see the non-deduplicated tiered storage scaling of VDI sessions. It nicely ramps up and linearly towards total 1,500 VMs. You see all the reads and writes happening in a definite range. And then on the right, we have with deduplication. We are able to achieve almost the same scale. And the writes, reads and writes are a little bit more varied, but that, we understand the reason for that. There are cases where we need to go and fetch some metadata and things like that, but it does not affect overall system performance. So this actually proves that we are able to achieve the same performance semantics and 80%, almost 80% savings with the use of deduplication. Cool? Okay. All right. So with this, I'm going to go to the next part of the talk, which is really about your secondary storage. We covered primary storage in detail of how to actually scale with VDI. Now we're going to talk about the second good data set, which is a good candidate for dedup, which is backup. But before I do that, there is a short survey that all of you should have got when you probably entered. And the survey is really about us collecting some information about file servers and needs for storage and things like that. It could be completely anonymous if you wish to be. Don't fill out your name or email address. But if you do want to talk, then I would highly encourage you to do that. So if you can do us a favor and fill that out, it'll take a couple of minutes. That'd be great. Thanks. So with this, we'll talk about the second workload, which is interesting for dedup as well, which is backup. And we are happy to announce that we are now supporting virtualized backup as a scenario for deduplication. Why this is interesting is because, as in the case for VDI, where the data set itself tends to be a good candidate for dedup, backup is a cost. It's sometimes a problem of cost for the enterprise admins. There is a lot of storage which gets stored and backed up. So we often and a lot of times get asked of, hey, how can we actually use dedup to actually save our costs for storage? So for virtualized backup, yes, we have a solution now. This is actually enabled in the same way as we enable VDI. So on the left, we have four multi-node Hyper-V server. In this case, we had four-node server. Hyper-V clusters, which are connected over SMB3 to a CCPS volume. And then within those VMs, as one of the VMs is a DPM server. It's running virtualized, and it's backing up to a set of backup shares, which are served out from the cluster CSV volumes on the scale-out file servers. The deduplication job runs on the backup shares itself, and it's actually able to get significant savings. And I was mentioning, it's a brand new scenario for Windows Server 2012 R2 now. One of the key hoster out of United Kingdom, SAS Plaza, actually sent us this code, and I couldn't resist putting it in the slide. And if you attended the DPM session earlier in the morning, you would have covered this there as well in detail. But they are able to see a savings rate of around 74% for their backup storage. As I was mentioning, it really depends on your data set, what the workload is, because deduplication rates tend to vary based on the type of data which is being backed up. But this is an example from them directly that they are able to get 74% savings. So this is really about, we started on this journey based off of CPS, the cloud platform system that we just announced. Just a quick show, how many of you got a chance to see the cloud platform system which was there and attend some of the talks? That's great. I'm wearing my cloud platform t-shirt as well. I skipped out on wearing the speaker shirt. I'm showcasing the products. But we started on this journey with cloud platform system by Microsoft. But then we took the learnings, and then we are publishing a white paper which allows anybody who's running a private cloud with any backup solution to achieve the same rate of deduplication savings. So you can optimize your storage for backup as well. So cloud platform system is a new offering from Microsoft powered by Dell. And it's an integrated full rack solution with multi-node file server, multi-node storage servers, and some additional storage capacity. And you can scale from anywhere from 1 to 4 racks for powering up to 2,000 VMs. On a conceptual level, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on the cloud platform system itself, but I'll highlight what the key aspects of the backup scenario and where deduplication lights up are. So from a conceptual level, the cloud platform system is broken up into a management plane, which is with the admin portal, the tenant portal, and the service management API. Then you have system center components. Then you have storage. Storage is a 4-node file server with a set of storage on the back plane as well. It's completely N+2 fault tolerant, and in this slide you would have highlighted that backup and DR actually enabled on the tenant VMs. So the tenant VMs, whichever number of capacity that you would have deployed, either 512 to 2000, are backed up into to their own backup shares. And on those backup shares is where we are able to run dedupe and find a lot of savings. So with that, Daniel is going to show it how it works.
All right, thanks.
Yep. Yeah.
So we figured we could actually show you a demo on how this is actually done in the CPS system. So I'm connected here to CPS and to one of our CPS test systems, actually. And as Rudwig said, CPS uses virtualized CPM for its backup and then dedupe on the backup storage. So let me first show you how the storage is organized here. And I'm sure you've seen this in the other sessions already. I just want to quickly recap this. So basically, we have 14 tenant chairs here with a total capacity of around a little more than 150 terabytes. And then we have 16 backup shares with a total capacity little more than 120 terabytes. DPM in CPS is responsible for backing up the data in the tenant shares into these backup shares. Now, by the capacity, you can already see that the tenant capacity exceeds the backup capacity. So you can already see that this is heavily relying on dedupe, because if the tenant shares are maxed out, we couldn't even do a single backup. So let me show you how the DPM servers here are configured. And in CPS, most of the management functions are virtualized, so we have virtualized DPM servers here, a total of 8, as you can see. And I'm actually connected to one of the DPM servers here. So this particular server is responsible for protecting 125 tenant VMs here. And as you can see, everything works. we have 8 recovery points, for example, for this particular virtual disk here. The configuration is such that DPM keeps 7 days of history for each tenant VM. This is actually SLA in the cloud platform system. Another thing worth mentioning here is the backup window, which is there's a daily backup window, and the time for this backup window is 12 hours in total. Now, this is important because what we need to do after DPM finishes its backup, so after it backs up the new data, we need to deduplicate the data and put it in the chunk store. And we need to avoid that the two overlap, so we don't want backup and deduplication running at the same time. So let me show you the actual storage dedupe volumes here. So I'm connected to one of the backup storage nodes in a PowerShell session, since this system is running Core Server. And let's take a look at the dedupe volumes. Sorry. Now, as I said, there are a total of 16 backup shares here, and they're all enabled for dedupe. And you can see that we're getting pretty good savings out of all of them here, so between 70 and even more than 90%. And we're saving a lot of data here, so multiple terabytes. So what I want to emphasize here really is what's new here is really that dedupe is now able to deal with this kind of real cloud scale. And this is really enabled in all of the patches that we've just released. We can drill down into one of the volumes here. So the capacity of this volume is 7.2 terabytes. And we're actually storing more than 8 terabytes of backup data in this already. But we're only using less than 1.5 terabytes. So there's still plenty of room left in this backup share here for DPM to put much more backups, actually. And you can see the savings rate is pretty fantastic here with 82%. So now let me show you how the data is organized in this backup volume. So as I said, DPM is running virtualized here, and it's doing its backup. It's writing its backup data into these VHDs here. Those are dynamic VHDs, each a terabyte in size, and you can see they're currently around half a terabyte to 3/4 of a terabyte. And as I mentioned earlier, it's important that after DPM finishes writing the new backup data to these virtual disks here, that we can actually deduplicate the data within the 12-hour time slot that we have before the next backup job starts. So let's take a look and see how the dedupe jobs are doing on the system. And I'm showing here the latest dedupe jobs that we're running, and we can see all of them completed successfully. And we can also see here that they all completed in under 12 hours. So most of them were actually much quicker, and we're also seeing that we get pretty decent throughput here, up to a gigabyte per second at times. So to summarize, again, we see great savings here with dedupe, just as in the VDI example, and that is why CPS really uses dedupe to make its backup storage much more efficient. Now, what should be noted, though, is that this is not restricted to DPM. In fact, we can now support any virtualized backup solution. And now, Rudwig, show how we can build such a system.
Sure. Absolutely. All right. I'm still just pumped that we are able to do all that remotely. Going into a little bit of detail of how the storage configuration is on the cloud platform system, we have 126 terabytes of space available for backup. But we also want to maintain a certain number of backups or some certain number of days of backup on the same amount of storage. So our consideration is that we want to allow the maximum amount of size available to the backup storage at all points in time. In terms of JBODs, you might have seen all the details in the cloud platform system as well. So I'm not going to go into a lot of details on each one of them. From a storage spaces configuration perspective, we have configured backup to be with dual parity. This is, again, keeping in mind that we want to allow as much amount of space available on the storage while providing high availability on the storage configuration as well. That was the reason why. And then from a file server perspective, we have multiple pools, and one pool is actually dedicated as a backup pool. This is where the shares for the backup PhDs reside, and we run on those volumes deduplication so that we are able to exact space savings as well. We covered this a little bit. We have the four-node scale-out file server cluster. Again, the servers themselves are standard servers. If you want to set these up in a private cloud instance yourself, we recommend you use, we try to have the system memory aligned to the amount of cache that you will need. We were using, for this particular configuration, aligned it to the 128 gigabytes. And then from a storage perspective, the difference is we are using two SSDs as the hot tier, and then 16 hard drives for per JBOD for the backup volume as well. Now, in terms of setting up DPM for success, as Daniel was mentioning, we have the same storage node which is on which backup needs to perform the backup activity, and dedup needs to perform dedup activity. So we want to keep those jobs running in parallel. So we have specific time windows in which we need to finish. I'll talk about time windows in a little bit. Daniel covered that as well. But so our balance is between performance, so that we can finish the optimization jobs in a particular amount of time, versus scale. So there is a balance that we are trying to achieve. The settings that we have are based on those balances. The first one, parity, is because we want to allow maximum amount of storage for the backup pools. But then the storage spaces configurations are for optimizing for performance. So the number of columns or the disk interleaves are for performance. And then enclosure awareness, again, is for availability. So these are, again, going to be detailed in much detail if you want to build your own private cloud solution with a virtualized backup for any virtualized backup with dedup in a white paper that we are publishing. And then finally, we are formatting the drives as or the volumes as NTFS, but we are keeping that as 64 KB chunk IOs so that we align that to the dedup IO sizes, so that we don't have to pay the penalty of multiple redundant IOs. From a dedup configuration perspective, we are configuring it to enable it with the Hyper-V mode. This mode makes sure that we are optimizing live files because DPM keeps the handles to the backup volumes open, and we want to optimize that in a particular amount of time as well. We are setting the minimum file edge days to be zero so that we pick up the churns on a nightly basis. And then for optimizing at large scale, we have some settings so that we can optimize dedup for performance. So we are reserving some amount of IO or performance or CPU capacity for performance for hashing of dedup chunks as well. And these settings are listed in detail. But then finally, there is a new functionality that we are enabling, which is known as priority optimization. What happens on a backup scenario is that when backups are actually happening, the IOs come to the backup volumes in fragments. That creates fragmentation on the backup volumes. Now, when deduplication runs, it needs to catch up to these fragments. So the more number of fragments, the more amount of work that deduplication needs to do. And at some point, we start running into the limits of file system fragmentation on the volume. Well, what we found was that if you actually run a lot of workload within a particular tenant space over a period of time, you will create enough fragments that we will not be able to catch up or create issues because the file system is really at its limits. So for that, we actually introduced this new functionality, which is known as priority optimization. And what that really does is that it catches up to fragments which are actually getting created. So when backups are happening, if we start detecting there are more fragments than what we can support, we start optimizing. So with that, we catch up. And then what also helps us to do is that it helps us to maintain our SLA in terms of by how much amount of time that we can finish the deduplication job in. So so we highly recommend that you set up priority optimization on the backup scenario as well. But it's also a study that you would need to do. I mean, it depends on the workload which is running within the VMs themselves, because backup and dedup both are sensitive to the data set that is running and the number of IOs which are happening. So while we recommend it, when you're setting up your own private cloud system and doing virtualized backup, you need to study that environment and make the call whether it is required for you as well or not. From a configuration perspective, we have 8 VMs running. We have 8 DPM servers running as VMs per rack on the cloud platform system, each connected to 21 terabyte backup disks. We recommend that the backup disk size be 1 terabyte. Larger the disk size, the more amount of time deduplication needs to take. And then we start running into, again, file system limits when the file sizes go beyond certain sizes. And then from internal testing, we have found that it actually reduces the SLA of your solutions. If you want to maintain high availability, you want to maintain your high uptime, we recommend that you actually keep it at 1 terabyte. And then all the VHDs are actually stored on dedup-enabled storage. So we touched on this earlier, but one of the key problems that we have in a rack which has got a same set of storage or pools which are actually serving out backup volumes and dedup volumes is that we are competing for resources. And so we split up. And so the way cloud platform system works, it actually splits up time. There is what is called a production window. The production window is when the VMs are running, the workload is running, you expect high availability and high uptime on those. But then we have a maintenance mode. And what maintenance mode is the time when maintenance activities on the cloud platform system can catch up. The backup runs in the maintenance mode. And then during that time, backup activities are happening. All the VMs running on the cloud platform system are backed up to your backup volumes. And we allow full, we don't, like deduplication doesn't get in the way. That production window is 12 hours, but the remaining 12 hours is for deduplication. So for making that work, we have to alter the deduplication schedule, which is set by default on the system. We disable all default schedules, and then we set a custom optimization schedule, which runs on a nightly basis, and we try to finish that within a period of our maximum upper bound is 12 hours, but internal testing, we are able to finish it within 5 to 6 hours on standard workloads which are actually running. And then we set a custom optimization schedule for the weekend as well, so that we can run full optimization. This is for cloud platform system, how we are actually set up the schedules, and this is based on the scale of the cloud platform system and the hardware which is for the cloud platform system as well. But it really depends on your setup, your configuration, your environment. If there is a different environment, you have different IOPS characteristics, you can set up the schedules to run in any way using the commands that we are providing. But try to actually not have backup and dedup actually compete for resources at the same time. It doesn't tend well to the thing. And then finally, for enabling all of this, we are requiring that you actually update your deployment of Windows Server 2012 R2 deployment with a November patch. It is true for the VDI scenario and the virtualized backup scenario both. The patch is actually pre-configured on this cloud platform system hardware, but is generally available for everybody to actually set up your deduplication schedules as well. So, in summary, we have the cloud platform system as an example, but we recommend that you have your dedicated backup pool, which is backing up all, which is your backup storage for your tenant VMs. You have DPM or your backup solution run in a virtualized environment. You stick to 1 terabyte VHDX files. That's what we recommend. The total size of the volumes that you are configuring, around 5 to 7 terabytes, so that we are able to finish on a nightly basis. And then install the November 2014 rollup. So with that, next steps, calls to actions. We highly recommend you view, read our white paper. It's published on downloads on Download Center now. It has all the details on the how to actually go about setting up the virtualized setup for VDI at scale, including all the hardware and the knobs and everything like that. And we have another paper coming for virtualized backup as well. And if you have questions at this point, we're happy to take questions. No questions? Sounds good.
You can obviously come to us after the talk.
Yeah, we are here. I would have said if it was earlier that you can come to the booth, but I think the booth expo is closed right now. So again, my name is Ritwik. I'm happy. My name will be in, and Daniel's name will be in the deck as well. This is a recorded session. You can find us with our names at Microsoft.com if you have any questions. I'm happy to answer that as well.